जय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल ओम श्री संबद्ध भवतीस ओम गौरी श्री संबद्ध भवतीस ओम गौरी श्री संबद्ध भवतीस ओम गौरी श्री गुरु गौरंगा शिला प्रभुपाद की जय ओम गणाचे मदंदशा गणजना श्लोकया चक्षुर मेडिताम by Sri Gurave Namaha. So first we'll start speaking about Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, of course, is the spiritual master of Gaur Kishoras Babaji Maharaj, who is the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the spiritual master of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vinanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, the founder of Acharya of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. So, Bhakti Vinod Thakur is often referred to as the seventh Goswami, which is a really interesting title. That is, normally we hear about six Goswamis in Vrindavan. Last night we were talking about Srila Jiva Goswami. But the real term, or the meaning of the term Goswami, is one who can control the senses, one who is a master of the senses. Nowadays, of course, they have Goswami families. And many of these Goswami families have sold the property of the deities in Vrindavan because they're descendants of the original followers of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan who maintained the temple. So a lot of the property of the temples was utilized previously for maintaining the temple. And so they sold it. Many of them sold it for their family maintenance, which was not the proper thing to do. In any case, Goswami is not simply an hereditary title. It indicates someone who is able to control the senses, like we hear from Rupa Goswami. Vajra Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Pashta Vegam. That controlling the senses means to control the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. And of all the senses, which sense is the most difficult to control? Does anyone know?
Tongue.
That's the Prashanam prayer, which you all know in Bengali, which none of you know the meaning of. So, just so many times I go places and I ask the devotees, what is the meaning of, or say the prayer in English, and they can't say it, because they just say it. They just say things in Sanskrit or in Bengali, and they don't know the meaning of things. Anyway, when Prabhupada was on the planet, we would always say it in English. So, getting back to the point, the Bhakti Vinod Thakur is called the seventh Goswami because he had absolute control of his senses, and he had many Krishna conscious children. Of course, some of his children opposed other children. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that. He had Lalit Prasad Thakur, who was practically of a different philosophical persuasion than Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to call Lalit Prasad Thakur my Sahajabhai. You understand? Sahaja means to take something very easily or cheaply. And generally before Bhakti Vinod Thakur appeared, Vaishnavism was taken extremely cheaply. In fact, you know, people were engaged in so many Vamanal activities, illicit sex, for example, in the name of Vaishnavism, or appreciating Krishna's pastimes in Braj, especially the Leela between Radha and Krishna and the gopis, etc. So, therefore, Bhakti Vinod Thakur really gave a firm philosophical understanding. Previously, there was this system whereby people would get the Siddha Pranali at the time of initiation. In other words, you would approach your guru would tell you, you're a gopi, you're a coward boy, or you're a parent of Krishna, or friend of Krishna in the spiritual world. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur very nicely explained in his books, particularly we mentioned yesterday, the Jiva Dharma and Bhajana Rahasya, that one has to actually be on the proper platform before one can understand the rasa one has, and one can understand what one's eternal spiritual body is, at the Siddhadeya, what to speak of Vastu city, which is the ultimate conclusion of understanding one's spiritual identity. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very elaborately described all the different stages of devotional service. And yesterday we mentioned the Jiva Dharma, which has perhaps the most elaborate philosophical description of the three stages of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, except the Shatsundarma, which you mentioned last night. But the Jiva Dharma tells the same thing in the context of a story. There's different Babaji's talking to different devotees. Anyways, we don't need to talk about the Jiva Dharma today. But in any case, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very, very strict, not only insofar as his own self, but with others. And yesterday we told the story about Vishakshena, who was the imitation Mahavishnu, who was dancing with so-called gopis in the middle of the night. And now we'll tell the story about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's regularizing the deity worship in Jagannath Puri. Now the deity worship in Jagannath Puri, generally the pujari is executed in a very, or were executed in a very loose fashion. And in many cases, you found, even today, you find some of the pandas there mixing, Prabhupada said that they're mixing fish with their Mahaprasada. Mixing fish with the Jagannath Mahaprasada, not a very good idea. Of course, there are injunctions in some of the literatures that even fish is like Mahaprasada and Jagannath Puri. But we don't follow that injunction. And Prabhupada never repeated that injunction. You can find so many injunctions that were not actually passed down in disciplic succession. And that's why it's very, very confusing for people who read the Vedic literatures, you know, Vedeshu, Durubhama, Durubhama, Mavato, because you read about all these stories and it may even awaken sort of a karma kanja mentality in you rather than a mentality of bhakti. I remember there was one book even published about Ekadashi in ISKCON that really just like was talking about all the material benefits you get from following this Ekadashi or that Ekadashi. And even there's one story the devotees like to recite, which is really not coming down to cyclic succession, about how Prahlad Maharaj became Prahlad Maharaj because in a previous life he was arguing with his girlfriend. I'm sure you heard this story before. And he stayed up all night on Nishima Chaturdasi and fasted because he was angry with his girlfriend. Now, that story, yes, they cite some Puranic reference. However, many of the Puranas, in fact, practically all the Puranas except for the Bhagavad Purana have been changed dramatically throughout the ages. And only those Puranas or that information which comes in disciplic succession can we actually be sure, absolutely sure of. That's why when we accept these stories, we should accept stories that have been told by our acharyas. Does everyone understand that? Because you can pick something from this Purana, the Shiva Purana, or the Karma Purana, or this or that. Unless the acharya has actually repeated that, we don't know for sure whether it's true or not. Because things have to come down into simple succession. Nowadays, devotees are so sophisticated, they go into all these Puranas and quote all these things that none of our acharyas have actually spoken about. Srila Madhvacharya even states that the Mahabharata has actually been changed dramatically. There's about 80 different versions of the Mahabharata, and some of them differ dramatically from the others, the South Indian version or North Indian version. In any case, we accept things coming in disciplic succession. And our mantras, Sampradaya Vinaya Mantras, Te Nishpala Mataha, if you get a mantra that's not in disciplic succession, it's not going to work. So we have to always be connected with our parampara. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought back Vaishnavism into the parampara. Anyway, so talking about Jagannath Puri and the spontaneous worship that the pujaris were doing for Lord Jagannath, years before Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared, Sripad Ramanujacharya went to Jagannath Puri and he observed that people were not so spontaneous, or not so dedicated to the Vaidhi or the rules and regulations. Of course, at that time, the Bajoris actually were on the spontaneous platform. And so he thought, let me regularize the deity worship here. But what happened is that Lord Jagannath didn't want the deity worship regularized. And Lord Jagannath threw him out of Jagannath Puri, and he arrived in Kurukshetra. And when he got to Kurukshetra, he didn't know whether it was a Vishnu deity there or Shiva deity or whatever the deity was. He didn't know. But finally, when he understood it was Kurukshetra, the deity of Kurma, the incarnation of Krishna, then he was very, very happy. So that's what happened with Ramanujacharya. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a very dynamic approach to regularizing the deity worship. And the Pujaris definitely needed it. And even the king of Puri needed it, which we're going to talk about in a second. So it's described that he used to keep a pocket watch all the time. So he could make sure the deity worship was done precisely. And actually, Srila Prabhupada, I see some of you are not wearing watches. But it's actually part of our sampradaya to wear watches, whether you like it or not. People think, oh, watches are Maya. Let's see. Srila Gopal's not wearing a watch. Who else? I'm not going to go through everybody here. But even, I don't know, you don't have a watch on Prabhupada. But in many temples, we put a watch on the Prabhupada Murti. Because Prabhupada was always, he was very regulated, precise. That's one interesting thing about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we'll talk about his schedule in a second, that he did everything precisely on time, such as taking rest, waking up, which is, he rested practically nothing, and doing his correspondence, doing his writing, doing his chanting. Everything was done in a very punctual fashion. And actually that's described about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were actually very punctual in their activities. I mean, we like to be unregulated, right? We like to go to sleep late at night some nights, wake up late, and then other days sleep all day long, and then stay up all night partying. But this regulation is extremely important. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his pocket watch. At that time, they didn't have wristwatches like this. But he kept a pocket watch. It's called a fob. And he would always consult it for the time. And he regulated the deity worship in Jagannath Puri to the extreme punctuality. And then he noticed something when he was supervising, because he was the magistrate there. He got posted as magistrate in different places. He noticed something very interesting, or very sad, when he was regularizing the deity worship. He noticed that the king was taking all the money from the hundi and keeping it. So being in charge of the court, and the court was actually a British court. The British court at that time was actually over all the different aspects of Indian culture. I mean, the British actually changed Indian culture to British culture. Just like everyone likes to drink tea now, right? Before the British, no one drank tea. Even if you go to people's homes here in Fiji, people would offer me tea. It's interesting, isn't it? Prabhupada was upset. Prabhupada actually, he had this antipathy towards any type of tea. Which is interesting, because Prabhupada didn't really like the British influence over India. So when devotees started to drink tea, even for their health, Prabhupada got very upset. And he said, why are you drinking this tea? And he said, well, it's for our health. And then Prabhupada said, well, if you want to drink tea, I'll give you this tea, which he called the Brahmastra, which you mentioned before, which he put in hot peppers, and that is chilies, and ginger root, and it was extremely difficult to drink. And Prabhupada said, if you want to take this as a social drink, you can take this as a social drink. And nobody ever took it as a social drink. So when Prabhupada was on the planet, there was no tea taken. Anyway, get back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The king of Puri, the Raj of Puri, he was taking the money from the hundi and spending it. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, being in charge, that is, the English court, he passed judgment on the king, and he made the king pay for the worship of Lord Jagannath. In fact, he made sure that Lord Jagannath was getting opulent prasadam over 50 times a day. And so the king was really upset because he saw all the money going out of his treasury. And Lord Jagannath, of course, was very happy because when King Indradyumna installed Lord Jagannath originally, King Indradyumna asked Lord Jagannath for the benediction that Lord Jagannath's hands would never be dry. In other words, he'd be eating prasadam, eating boga. So Lord Jagannath eats boga all day long. So that he was asking for that benediction that Lord Jagannath could be eating all day long. In fact, that's what happens. You know, over 50 times a day, I don't think any of you could do that, even though you love to eat. But Lord Jagannath, of course, he's Krishna's spiritual body. He can eat millions of times a day. In fact, he's doing it in all the devotees' homes. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed judgment, and the king had to pay, and the king was watching his money go out, and the king was thinking, this is not good. So he called for all of his Brahmin assistants. He said, we got to do something about this Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So at that time, they didn't really hire gundas. They hired Brahmins to kill people. Nowadays, they just go to the police and give a bribe and everything. But in those days, if you wanted to kill someone, you hired Brahmins to do a sacrifice, to kill someone. So he hired a whole bunch of Brahmins, the king, to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So for 1 month, these Brahmins were doing this sacrifice. You know, swaha, kill, swaha, kill. I don't know the mantras for it exactly. And so they were doing the sacrifice, and after the month was over, guess what happened? The king's son died. So therefore it was understood that you could not hurt Bhaktivinoda Thakur at all. So there's so many stories about Bhaktivinoda Thakur regularizing the deity worship. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also discovered the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. Like many people were claiming that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared in the city of Navadvip, which is across the Ganges River. And even today, you'll find this controversy going on, that many people think or say that Lord Chaitanya appeared there. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wanted to find out the actual appearance place. And it's also interesting, there's some indication that his initiating spiritual master disagreed with him on this. His initiating spiritual master was, of course, Vipini Vihari Goswami. And his initiating spiritual master was actually rejected by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur traces the Vaishnava heritage through the Siksha Sampradaya, coming from Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, rather than Vipini Vihari Goswami. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would not even offer obeisances to Vipini Vihari Goswami. And Vipini Vihari Goswami would ask Bhakti Vinod Thakur, why doesn't Bhakti Siddhanta offer obeisances to me when he sees me? Why does he even not come near me? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said to his spiritual master, his initiating spiritual master, that actually my son has taken a vow not to go within 100 meters of a sahaja. It's very heavy stuff. Because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was known as the Srina Guru. I mean, he was so heavy that he would basically, if they found a Mayavadi or Arya Samaji, he would pick him up by the scruff of his neck and say, why are you teaching this nonsense? And for my buddies, he said, if you think everything is one, why don't you just wear a piece of cotton instead of this shirt? So he was very tall and strong too. I mean, very, very tall, stately, physically, externally tall and stately. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur did a lot of research, and as he was looking, from his house, one night he spotted a brilliance coming from where we know that Lord Chaitanya's appearance place is in Mayapur Dham, right near our temple. It's called the Yoga Pit. And the next day he went there and he saw a mound of tulsi trees. It was actually a Muslim village. And then he inquired, and then people actually knew that that was the appearance place of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And later on, to corroborate that, in other words, corroborate is a big word, to prove that, He brought Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was at that time like 125 years old. And Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was being carried around in a basket by his servant Bihari. So, because it was, you know, when you're 125 years old, it's understandable. So when Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was brought to the place where Bhaktivinoda Thakur said when Chaitanya appeared, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj jumped out of his basket. He was so ecstatic, even though he was 125 years old. And he started to jump in ecstasy. He approved of that being the place of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. So, perhaps the most important legacy that we have from Bhaktivinoda Thakur are his books. And he spent several years actually in seclusion chanting the holy names, and from 1874 to 1893, several of those years were spent in seclusion, not the whole time of course, because he was still working and collecting to build the temple, the yoga pit. So, and he wrote wonderful literatures like the Krishna Sangita, Tattva Sutra, Tattva Viveka, and poetry in Sanskrit, poetry in Bengali, and let's see. Oh, I mentioned the story yesterday about Charana Das Babaji, who started the Nitagor Radhe Shyam Hare Krishna Hare Rama. That story I told already. And he, even when he was working as a Supreme Court judge, he actually had a very, very tight schedule, and I'm going to read what his schedule is right now. I'm just paging to that particular area, which shows how we should be regulated in the same way to get many things done. We waste so much time during the day in idle talk like prajalpa, and sleeping unnecessarily, with surfing the internet, doing so many things where we can actually be engaged in saving the conditioned souls or engaged in our own bhajan. So, here's his schedule. His schedule was that between 7:30 and 8, he didn't stay up late at night, he took rest. And then at 10 p.m., he would get up. And he would rise and light his lamp and start writing until 4 o'clock in the morning. That's amazing. Of course, we have our Srila Prabhupada schedule. Srila Prabhupada would get up like at 1 o'clock in the morning generally, and he would write no matter what time he took rest at night. I remember in Mexico City, one time Prabhupada had a preaching program that went until 11 or 12 o'clock. It was in a city called Cuernavaca, which is outside of Mexico City, and all of us slept late. And Prabhupada got up like at 1 o'clock or 1:30, whatever. And then he came down to the temple room to see if Mangalarti was going on. And even the deity slept late that morning. And Prabhupada was so angry that, you rascals! And then the devotee said, Prabhupada, but we were up late last night. And Prabhupada said, I was up late too. So Prabhupada was very upset with that devotee sleeping late. Anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he would get up at 10 at night, right till 4. Then he took a little rest for half an hour. So, actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the, I guess, the acharya for what you call power naps. You've heard of power naps before? Nowadays, even in the workplace, they have some place, do you have that here in Fiji sometimes? Where people can, in America we have that, where people can take a power nap for 10 minutes. And it talks about increasing the efficiency of someone at work when they can do that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood you didn't have to sleep for a long period of time. You could just like take a little nap for 10 minutes, half an hour, and then you were fully refreshed. But we find devotees, nowadays they want to rest for 10, 11 hours. And sometimes here in the ashram I could hear the snoring going on. Previously. Anyway, so then he would get up at 4:30 and he would rise and wash his hands and face, and then he'd begin to chant japa until 7 o'clock. Then he would write letters at 7 to 7:30. Then he would read at 7:30. At 8:30 he would receive guests, and continue to read. And then from 9:30 to 9:45, he'd take rest. Just 15 minutes, power nap again. 9:45, he had his bath. He drank a half liter of milk, two chapatis, and a little fruit, and no khichdi in the morning. Like all of you like to eat heavy in the morning, he didn't eat heavy. Anyway, when Prabhupada was on the planet, we just had fruit in the morning, fruit and milk or yogurt in the morning, and little chickpeas and ginger root. That was it. Prabhupada said, that's our breakfast. But how or other, all of you like these real heavy. Like Prabhupada said, you like breakheads instead of breakfasts. Because one time they gave Prabhupada a heavy breakfast like that, and he said, what is it, breakhead or breakfast? Anyway, enough comments on that. So then at 9:55, he would go to court, and he would wear Western clothes, like coats, coat and pants, but he would have very big Tulsi mala, you know, double-sized mala on his neck, and very strong tilak. And he was so strong in his decisions that nobody could stand up to him in court. He would make his decisions very, very quickly. And he would do a full day's work in like 2 hours. He was so efficient in court. And he never had any debts. Anyway, at 10 o'clock, court began. At 1 o'clock, the court was finished. That's 3 hours. He'd come home and bathe and refresh. At 2 o'clock, he'd go back to the office. And then he'd stay there till 5. At 5 o'clock, he would translate works from Sanskrit to Bengali. And then he'd take his evening bath and a meal of rice, chapatis, and a little bit more milk. And it says here exactly what I said before. He could always consulted a pocket watch and kept time very punctually. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur avoided all luxurious things. He never went to the theater. Of course, at that time, there weren't any movies. But he never went to the theater or associated with anybody who went to the theater. He's equal to everyone of all the different castes. He didn't chew betel nut, like practically everybody does in India. I mean, if you've ever gone in India, you see even the taxi wallers, they have to have their little packets. You see these little plastic packets or whatever, metal packets, they open up and they have to chew and they spit and everything's red, all these red spit things all over the place. Bhaktivinoda Thakur spoke Bengali, Sanskrit, English, Latin, Urdu, Persian, and Oriya. He was quite a linguist. I mean, his English is quite wonderful. It's better probably than most of us who are native English speakers. He started writing books at 12 years of age and continued turning out books up until his departure from this world. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then we can talk a little bit about Haridas Thakur, whose disappearance day it is today. So anybody have any questions about Bhaktivinoda Thakur before we go on to talking about Haridas? No? Questions, comments? Nobody ever has any questions here. It's just like, you all must be either self-realized or completely Maya, one of the two.
I have a question.
Yeah, you have a question, okay.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur made his timetable
during
his work and his activities for the day.
Yeah.
The night to. What about, what should we do? What
time
should we follow?
Well, you have to be practical. It says one, a devotee should not eat too much, eat too little, sleep too much, sleep too little. You have to adjust these things so whatever is best for your health. And also whatever best for your service. Like if your service is driving a car, for example, you should definitely, Prabhupada said, get 7 or 8 hours of rest a night. Isn't Sundar Gopal? He's had experience with that. What it means. And when I joined the movement, we all always used to sleep while driving cars. Because we were forced to get 5 hours of rest a night. And we'd sleep at the red lights. You understand? And it wasn't safe. I mean, many devotees died in our movement or got hurt severely. So you have to figure out what you need. Not too much, not too little. If you eat too much, you get sick. Like Prabhupada said, does anyone remember what Prabhupada said is the disease from overeating? starts with a D. Nobody knows. The disease from overeating is diabetes, Prabhupada said. You got that? So that means like eating the wrong things, fatty foods. Prabhupada actually said people get sick because they eat from eating too much. They get sick because of anxiety or uncleanliness. Prabhupada gave these three points when he's talking about sickness. If you can avoid these three, you'll avoid most sicknesses. Obviously, ultimately, you have to get sick and die. I mean, that's just part of having a material body. But these three things are actually something we should really concentrate on. And Prabhupada, in order to be healthy, he spent hours a day having a massage and his exercise. I mean, we tell the story that Prabhupada, when he first came to America, was that stopped? When Prabhupada first came to America, he wasn't exercising. And then he had his heart attack. And then they found this old Jewish doctor in New York who said, Swamiji, you've had a heart attack and you better exercise every day. And Prabhupada started exercising. That's when he started taking his morning walk, which was basically such a fast walk that those of us who walked with Prabhupada, even though we were very young at that time, couldn't keep up with Prabhupada. I remember just like running behind Prabhupada. And then the interesting thing is that Prabhupada would stop all of a sudden without any warning. And the devotees would probably crash into him. So they didn't want to crash into him, so they crashed into each other. So it was quite funny. The Prabhupada would stop and all the devotees, it looked like some comedy, you know, where everyone crashed into each other, but not Prabhupada. And then, because Prabhupada would make a point on the morning walk, he'd stop and say something about the scientists, and they'd hold him. You could hear that. They would hold a microphone to Prabhupada's mouth, and Prabhupada would make some philosophical point, because the devotee would always walk with Prabhupada with a tape recorder. So Prabhupada walked every day. He got sun every day. He took his massage generally at about 12 before the noon prasadam, and he was taking a massage outside whenever possible. Obviously, it was raining or there was some problem, he wouldn't be outside. But he'd take the morning sun, like the 11 o'clock sun, 11, 12 o'clock sun, and Prabhupada would have his massage, and the massage would sometimes last for 45 minutes. And it's interesting, the servant had to cook at the same time. That's a hard one. Shrutakirti talks about how he had to just set up everything for cooking on Prabhupada's multi-tiered cooker, so that prasadam would be ready after Prabhupada bathed. And Prabhupada always wanted fresh rotis and stuff like that. So, and then in the evening, Prabhupada took a massage, and the massage sometimes lasted an hour or two also. It's interesting. And so you may say massage for so many hours a day, but Prabhupada understood his body belonged to Krishna, and therefore he had to take measures to keep the body going. Not that he was attached, like we are attached to our bodies. I mean, developing muscles or whatever people do nowadays to our body. But Prabhupada wanted to serve Krishna as long as possible. So he used that, but it was all done punctually. All at the same time every day. Prabhupada would eat at the same time every day. And unless there's a preaching engagement at night, because Prabhupada did do evening preaching, Prabhupada would take rest at the same time, or have his massage, as I said, would go on for 2 hours. The servants would actually have to sit there, Prabhupada, under the mosquito net, because in India there were mosquitoes, and massage Prabhupada until Prabhupada took rest for 2 hours. And it really was hard to do that, because 2 hours of just, and Prabhupada wanted very strong massage. He said, don't give me a massage like some woman. He would say to his servants, you know, people would go like very gently on Prabhupada, oh, like that, Prabhupada. But Prabhupada said, no, what are you doing? And just press. And so they practically have to press really hard on Prabhupada while giving Prabhupada a massage. And so Prabhupada, in other words, Prabhupada was regulated, but he did understand what his basic, even physical necessities were. So when we determine our schedule, we should understand what our physical necessities are. If you're sick or getting older or something, you may need to take some more rest, or you may need a certain type of food, or you may be allergic to something, or you may need some sunshine. Everyone needs sunshine. So anyway, so Prabhupada actually set the example of what we should do. Not to torture the body in the name of Krishna consciousness. And so you determine, that's up to you to determine how much sleep you need, what type of food you need, to keep the body healthy, not to satisfy your senses. Most of us are eating to satisfy the tongue, right? We're not thinking of what's good for us. We're thinking of what tastes good. There's a difference between what tastes good and what's good for you. Remember that. Anyway, perhaps no one will follow what I just said. But there is a vast difference. We're not hippies. The hippies had this philosophy, if it feels good, it's good for you. But we don't accept that. If it feels good, it's probably not good for you. Of course, you should like your prasadam. Prabhupada wanted tasty prasadam. At one point, they were giving Prabhupada prasadam that wasn't tasty, in the name of health, and Prabhupada said, let the starvation committee go to hell. You know, so it should be tasty. I mean, because you won't digest. Part of digestion is actually chewing and tasting the food. So it's important to chew. And when Prabhupada ate, he also took a long time eating. That's interesting. Like Prabhupada would sit, and sometimes, if he wasn't sitting in a social engagement, preaching engagement, Prabhupada would face the wall when he was taking prasadam. And Prabhupada would eat so very slowly, taking little tiny bites out of things. And it was very meditative, because he would honor prasadam. We devour prasadam, we eat prasadam, but Prabhupada would honor it, understanding it's Krishna. Like Lord Chaitanya said that the saliva of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is within the prasadam. So Prabhupada would actually worship prasadam. It's very, very amazing to see Prabhupada take prasadam. And I had the opportunity to cook for Prabhupada sometime. It was quite nice. I mean, we cooked. One thing Prabhupada liked was this sweet corn. You know what sweet corn is? Not like the corn you have here in Fiji, which is animal corn. You know, in America we feed that type of corn to the pigs. You know, the corn is so hard it'll break your teeth, you know, if you try to eat it. You love it here for some reason or other. And Prabhupada considered that corn not edible. And Prabhupada said shudra food. But then when we were cooking for Prabhupada, we decided to, myself and Shrutakirti, we decided to offer Prabhupada the sweet corn. You've had sweet corn before, right? The corn, and they have it in, they have it sometimes here at the hotels. And so we offered it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asked for seconds and thirds. Everyone was shocked. You know, Prabhupada said corn is for shudras. And there he is asking for more and more. Because he liked it was good tasting. But the Indian corn Prabhupada never ate. Just to let you know, it's unofferable. So, I hope I'm not insulting anybody who likes it. I mean, you can make rotis out of it if you grind it up. You dry and grind it up. That's all right. But not the corn itself. So, anyway, getting back to the point is, yes, you have to understand your basic necessities, not more, not less, and then regulate your life. Do the same thing every day. I mean, I do that. I mean, I get up at, what time do I get up? About 3:30 every morning, even without an alarm. I mean, the body just automatically gets up because I've set good habits. As a brahmachari, when I first joined the movement, we need to develop good habits. So if you're older, as Prabhupada said, it's harder to teach an old dog new tricks. But still, some of us old dogs like me, we can learn things. We can develop new habits, but it's much harder. It's much harder. So now is the time to do it. Actually, the best time to do it is Komaro Macharet Pragyo. as when one's a little child. That's why we're seeking to establish a school here for the children, which is very important. I mean, Prabhupada put a lot of effort, money, management expertise into developing a school. Of course, the devotees weren't properly able to carry out Prabhupada's instructions. However, Prabhupada considered it of utmost importance to have a gurukul, or a school for children, because the children are very impressionable. Whatever you do when you're very young, those impressions remain with you throughout your whole life. I know that I can remember things from when I was 2 years old better than I can remember the Bhagavad Gita. You know, just like cartoons or whatever else I was watching. And songs, you know, nonsense songs from musical, you know, some, not Bollywood musicals. Because I wasn't exposed to Bollywood. But, you know, so it's really nonsense. So it's important that, this is called samskara. So the literal meaning of the word samskara, of course, Prabhupada defines it as reformatory practice, but actually means impressions. You understand? To give impressions on the subtle body. Do you understand what I'm talking about? So whenever we associate with something, we're getting impressions on the subtle body. Karnam guna sangasha, sarasa jama jonishu. And therefore, our subtle body is getting shaped in a particular way. We're getting either impure or purified. Or, as Prabhupada said, dissolving the subtle body. Bhakti dissolves the subtle body. So we have to be very careful with the children not to expose them to things that are going to really pollute their consciousness. We were talking about this last night. I mean, that's a great challenge for parents in the modern day and world, isn't it? Because then people have video games or other things like that. So being a parent is a big challenge in Kali Yuga. So we need to have a school here. You know, people think it's not important to have a school. It's extremely important. Because if we lose our second generation, third generation, then what's the use? Isn't it? Then it'll be just a bunch of old people here running the temple. We're going to have like wheelchairs on the altar for the pujaris. And the deities will have to be like Tota Gopinath in Jagannath Puri. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Tota Gopinath, in order for Gadadhar Pandit Goswami to dress him, he sat down. So we'll have to ask Radhagopi Bhattacharya to sit down so we can dress him. We don't want that. So we want to have more and more generations. I mean, any successful religious institution, practically the first thing they do, almost before they build a temple, is to make a school or facilitate children. It's almost practically the first thing. And because we haven't done that here, you know, we're just like getting older. All of us are getting older, including me. So anyway, so that's a plug for the school. Very important. Otherwise, what's the sense of having children if they don't grow up to be devotees? They're not putra, they're mutra. That's not my statement. The acharyas say that. What's the sense of life if you don't become a devotee? What's the meaning of life? And everything's based on association, especially with children. Anyway, we have to end here. We never got to Bhaktivinoda, to Haridas Thakur. So tonight, we're having a program, not in the temple. Nobody should schedule a program in the temple tonight, because we're gonna be in Mahasingh's house in Nasauri, and we can speak about Haridas Thakur tonight at the program. Tomorrow also is a very important day. It's Visvarupa Mahotsava, which is, Visvarupa, of course, is Lord Chaitanya's brother. And we talk about him, and it's also the day signifying or celebrating when Prabhupada took sannyas. So it's a very significant day in the Vaishnava calendar, and tomorrow morning we'll talk about these things. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki.